Picture this. Summer of 1940. Southern England, the skies above Kent and Sussex are full of noise and smoke and the sound of Merlin engines at full throttle. Somewhere up in that chaos, a British pilot is rolling hard, trying to get his sights on a Heinkel 111 before it reaches London, trying to save a city, maybe trying to save a country. History remembers that pilot in a Spitfire, most of the time he was in a hurricane. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair, because tonight we're going to talk about one of the most consequential injustices in aviation history, a fighter aircraft that absorbed more punishment, flew more sorties, and shot down more enemy aircraft in the summer of 1940 than any other British airplane, and somehow ended up cast as the supporting character in someone else's story. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now, the hurricane. The man behind it was Sidney Cam, born in Windsor in 1893, the son of a carpenter and from childhood obsessed with flight. He built model gliders as a boy. He talked himself into a job at the Martinsied Aircraft Company during the First World War and worked his way up from the shop floor. By 1925, he was chief designer at Hawker Aircraft Limited. He was 32 years old. Cam was not a man who wasted words or motion. People who worked with him described him as exacting to the point of difficult. If something didn't work, he wanted to know exactly why, and he wanted to know immediately. He was not interested in theories about why it might work eventually. He wanted it to work now, with the materials and tools available now, and he wanted it to fly. By 1934, the Royal Air Force was flying biplanes. The Hawker Fury was beautiful. The Bristol Bulldog was well-liked. Both were biplanes with fixed undercarriage and top speeds in the neighborhood of 200 miles per hour. The Luftwaffe under Hermann Göring was quietly building the Messerschmitt 109. The political situation in Europe was deteriorating faster than the Air Ministry wanted to acknowledge. Cam went to the Air Ministry in 1934 with a monoplane fighter proposal. They expressed interest. They expressed a lot of things. And Cam went back to his drawing boards and built the airplane anyway. The Hurricane prototype first flew on November 6, 1935. George Bulman at the controls. Bulman was Hawker's chief test pilot and one of the great test pilots of his era, a man who had flown everything and feared almost nothing. He landed that afternoon and told Cam it was a magnificent aeroplane. Test pilots don't always say that. Test pilots are usually the first ones to catalog the problems, because their job is to find the problems before the production pilots do, somewhere over a combat zone at 20,000 feet. When a test pilot calls an airplane magnificent, you should probably believe it. What made the Hurricane what it was? Start with the airframe. The fuselage was a steel tube structure covered with fabric. The inner wing sections were metal, but the outer panels were fabric covered. By the mid-1930s, this was an older approach. Reginald Mitchell at Supermarine was building the Spitfire with stress skin aluminum construction throughout. The Spitfire was the future. Everyone knew it. But the Hurricane's construction had an advantage that became obvious the moment these airplanes started taking combat hits. Bullets and cannon shells go through fabric. They make holes. Sometimes large holes, but the steel tube frame underneath can absorb a tremendous amount of punishment before the aircraft becomes genuinely uncontrollable. An all-metal stress skin construction, when penetrated by cannon fire, can suffer progressive structural failure. Holes in aluminum skin become stress risers. Stress risers become cracks, can propagate rapidly under the loads of combat maneuvering. Hurricanes came home with the fabric hanging off the fuselage in strips, with gaping wounds in the outer wing panels. With holes in the tail surfaces you could look through, and they flew, and the pilots survived, and ground crews patched fabric sections in hours and sent those aircraft back into the fight. That matters more than any performance specification when you're fighting a battle of attrition above the English countryside with the fate of Western civilization riding on how many serviceable fighters you can put in the air tomorrow morning. The Battle of Britain. Let me give you the shape of it. Official dates. 10th of July to the 31st of October 1940. Hermann Göring told Adolf Hitler it would take 4 days to destroy fighter command. The Luftwaffe had numerical superiority. It had combat-hardened pilots from the Spanish Civil War and the Blitzkrieg campaigns across France and the Low Countries. It had a strategic doctrine, Adlerangriff Eagle Attack, designed to systematically eliminate British airfields, radar stations, and aircraft production. Hugh Dowding commanded fighter command. Air Chief Marshal Hugh Dowding, later Lord Dowding, a man who understood attrition mathematics as well as any commander in history. He knew that German escort fighters could only operate over England for a limited time before their fuel ran out. He knew that a British pilot who bailed out over England could fly again tomorrow. A German pilot who bailed out over England was a prisoner. He fought accordingly. At the start of the battle, Fighter Command had roughly 900 operational aircraft. About 540 of them were Hurricanes. About 290 were Spitfires. The tactical doctrine that emerged, not always perfectly executed but generally followed, was to send the Spitfires to engage the Messerschmitt 109 escorts at altitude. The Hurricanes would break through to the bombers. The logic was sound. The Spitfire, faster and more maneuverable at altitude, was better matched against the 109 in a turning fight above 20,000 feet. The Hurricane, somewhat slower but incredibly stable as a gun platform, was better suited to making gun runs on the larger, slower bomber formations. The Hurricane's 8 Browning 303 machine guns, harmonized at around 250 yards, put an enormous volume of fire into a convergence zone that was devastating to the relatively lightly protected Heinkel 111 and Dornier 17 airframes. Now here's where it gets interesting. When the historical tally came in after the battle, Hurricane pilots had accounted for approximately 55% of all German aircraft destroyed. 55%, the Spitfire, which receives 90% of the cultural memory of the Battle of Britain, accounted for roughly 42%, 55 to 42. By any objective measure, the Hurricane won the Battle of Britain and history gave the trophy to the Spitfire. I understand why. The Spitfire is one of the most beautiful aircraft ever built. That elliptical wing, which Mitchell designed to meet very specific aerodynamic requirements, happens to also be one of the most visually striking planforms in the history of aviation. The Spitfire looks fast standing still. It sounds glorious. It photographs beautifully. It became the symbol of the battle, and then the symbol of British resistance, and then the symbol of the entire war in the European theater. The Hurricane doesn't photograph as well. It's a more workmanlike looking airplane, solid, functional. It looks like what it is, an aircraft designed by a carpenter's son to go out there and get the job done. Let me tell you about 303 Squadron. 303 Squadron was a Polish fighter unit flying Hurricanes for the Royal Air Force. These were Polish pilots who had escaped after Germany invaded from the west, and the Soviet Union invaded from the east in September of 1939. Getting from Poland to Britain involved routes through Romania, Hungary, France, North Africa, and whatever other geography was available. Many of them had been flying for years. They had combat experience. They'd already been in a war. Some of them had been in two wars. When they arrived in Britain in the summer of 1940, some in the Royal Air Force brass were uncertain what to make of them. Language was a barrier. Procedures were different. The Polish pilots had a somewhat different approach to combat flying than the formal tactical doctrine specified. Their approach was broadly get close and kill it. 303 Squadron became operational in August of 1940. By the end of the Battle of Britain in October, they were the top-scoring fighter squadron in all of Fighter Command. Polish pilots, flying Hurricanes, they had more aerial victories than any Royal Air Force squadron, and one of their attached pilots, a Czech named Josef František, finished the battle with 17 confirmed kills, the highest individual total of any Allied pilot in the entire battle. František's story deserves a moment. He flew outside the formal squadron formations much of the time. He'd take off with his unit, then range out on his own looking for targets. His tactics would have gotten him disciplined in peacetime. In the summer of 1940, they got German aircraft out of the sky. He was killed in a training accident in October of 1940, right as the battle was winding down. He never knew he'd won it. There's a controversy from that summer I should mention, because it touches the Hurricane story directly. The big wing debate. Keith Park commanded 11 Group, covering southern England and London. Trafford Lee Mallory commanded 12 Group to the north. Park's doctrine was to scramble quickly and intercept the Luftwaffe formations as early as possible, even with small numbers. Lee Mallory believed in assembling large wing formations of 3 to 5 squadrons before engaging. The problem with the big wing concept was time. By the time 5 squadrons could form up and fly south to the fight, the German bombers were already over their targets. Park was sending small forces of Hurricanes into the teeth of formations 10 times their size, and it was costing him pilots and aircraft. But they were getting there in time to matter. The argument went all the way up to Dowding and eventually contributed to both Park and Dowding being pushed out of their commands after the battle. In November of 1940, the men who won the Battle of Britain were relieved of their jobs by colleagues who disagreed with how they'd won it. History has not been kind to that decision. Park and Dowding are now recognized as the architects of the victory, but they didn't get to enjoy it at the time. The Hurricane kept fighting. North Africa. Rommel's Africa Corps was driving east across the desert, and the Hurricane was going to meet it. In the desert, the aircraft became a tank buster. The Mark IID variant was fitted with 2 40mm Vickers guns, one under each wing, not machine guns, anti-tank cannon. 40mm shells capable of punching through armor plate, flying a tank-busting hurricane over North Africa meant making low, slow gun runs against targets that were shooting back with every anti-aircraft weapon they had. The guns had a slow rate of fire, which meant you had to be close and hold your aim. The pilots who flew those missions were, without question, some of the bravest men in the Royal Air Force. Malta. The besieged island in the middle of the Mediterranean, absorbing Axis air attacks around the clock, was defended largely by hurricanes in 1941 before Spitfires arrived to relieve the burden. The pilots of Malta flew in conditions that would have been considered unacceptable in any training environment. Exhausted, sometimes malnourished, flying damaged aircraft from cratered airfields, they held the island, Burma. The hurricane fought in the Pacific Theater as well, against Japanese air forces that were formidable and experienced. The jungle strips, the monsoon conditions, the logistical difficulties that made everything harder. The Hurricane, rugged and repairable, was the right aircraft for that environment. And the Soviet Union received nearly 3,000 hurricanes through the Arctic convoys. Those brutal supply runs past Norway to Murmansk and Archangel. Soviet opinion was mixed. Some pilots found it slower than their Yak fighters and less suited to the Eastern Front's combat profile. Others valued its ruggedness and the volume of fire from its armament. In the mathematics of the Eastern Front, where the casualty figures beggar imagination, a fighter that could survive battle damage and come home was worth more than its performance numbers alone would suggest. By the end of production in 1944, Hawker had built 14,533 Hurricanes, over 100 different production variants serving with at least 17 nations. The Hurricane was by any measure one of the most produced and most widely used combat aircraft of the Second World War. And Sidney Cam wasn't done. He went on to design the Hawker Hunter, the swept-wing jet fighter that became one of the great aircraft of the Cold War era, and then the Hawker Siddeley Harrier, the vertical takeoff and landing jet that changed naval aviation in ways still reverberating today. Not a bad legacy, but it started in November of 1935 with George Bulman landing that prototype at Brooklands and calling it magnificent. Flying Hurricanes are rare today. The Canadian Warplane Heritage Museum in Hamilton, Ontario operates one. The Royal Air Force Battle of Britain Memorial Flight keeps one airworthy alongside their Spitfires and their Avro Lancaster. The Imperial War Museum at Duxford has several examples. If you're ever in southern England and you hear a Merlin engine overhead, look up. It might be one of those. And if it's the Hurricane, watch it carefully. Notice the lines of it. The way it sits on the ground, solid and purposeful. The sound it makes climbing away, same engine as the Spitfire. Same Rolls-Royce Merlin, 12 cylinders, liquid-cooled, supercharged, making over 1,000 horsepower in its Battle of Britain specification. The sound is identical, but the airplane is different, and the job it did was different. 55% of the kills. Hugh Dowding himself called it the workhorse and backbone of fighter command. A workhorse. He meant it as the highest compliment he knew how to give. He'd watched those aircraft absorb punishment and keep flying. He'd seen the sortie numbers come in every evening. He knew exactly what his Hurricanes had done. The Hurricane deserved better than being anyone's second billing. It deserved to have its name on the monuments. Most of what I've covered tonight draws from John Ray's The Battle of Britain, New Perspectives, and the historical records maintained by the Imperial War Museum at iwm.org.uk. If you want to go deeper on 303 Squadron specifically, there's a wealth of material from Polish aviation historians that is well worth your time. You'll find us at radiohangar.com. I'm Taildragger. Same engine, different airplane. Don't forget which one did the work.